This podcast features an interview from the CNI 2011 Spring Membership Meeting. I'm Jerry Bain from EDUCAUSE, and EDUCAUSE podcasts are sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com. On this episode, we talk with Thomas Hickerson, Vice Provost and University Librarian, and Shauna Sadler, Technology Officer, both from the University of Calgary. We discuss the Taylor Family Digital Library, a newly constructed hub for their libraries and cultural resources, a principal division which includes the University Libraries, Art Museum, and the University of Calgary Press. So the Taylor Family Digital Library is a project, huge in scope, that inhabits 256,000 square feet at a cost of $203 million. Your organization has developed a $13 million technology plan. Can you give us some of the highlights of this plan and how it represents both a physical and programmatic convergence for all the units involved?
Talking about the building itself, probably the most important decision was that from the very first, we thought about the building as an integrated whole. So we did not focus on building a library, building a museum, providing space for a press, but in fact, we thought about every aspect of the building as a whole and tried to enmesh the various manifestations. And so we did that in physical terms, but we also did that in programmatic terms. And then in technologies, we assumed that the various technologies, while they had points of emphasis that related to particular programmatic areas, that in fact that the technologies would apply to all of the various activities. So we thought about it as a whole. And so in terms of the physical, probably the most obvious is the art gallery space, and that the opening to the museum is on the principal entryway through the building. On one side is double open doors to the museum space. On the other side is huge learning commons. So we think that some 10,000 people will go through that passageway every day. What museum gets to have 10,000 people walk by its front door? And on the second floor, where the student areas are on the second floor and the collaborative workrooms and so forth, we actually have a glass wall on that second floor that where students are, that even if they don't go in the museum, it's a whole wall of glass that allows them to look down into a two-story gallery. So we really thought about how can we create an ambience that has the full spectrum of the programs that go on there. In the programmatic area, we actually did a reorganization last year in which we brought together around principal areas of outcome, like research, like collections, like learning, like the Center for Scholarly Communication. But we applied all of them actually reach across museum, archives, and library. So each of those areas have curatorial and librarian and archivist, all with programmatic responsibilities under a particular outcome. So we've given up a functional organization in concentrating on how those programs can work together to realize common goals. And in fact, created a new area called the Center for Arts and Culture that brings the special collections and the archives and the museum program into a particular integrated program for support of research and learning. In technology, it's just a matter of thinking about all aspects of the program as a converged whole. And so probably one of the obvious examples of that is that in the galleries of the museum, there are actually electrical and data ports every 7.5 meters in both the ceiling and the floor. Mm-hmm. So we are assuming that new media and the use of media in the exhibition space will be an inherent part and is not different from the way we're supporting in some of the more explicitly library-related activities.
Could you detail a few of the technological highlights of the new facilities?
Sure. So the approach we took with technology in our new building is a layered approach to future-proof this building so it stays relevant technologically for as long as we possibly can. I certainly put an emphasis on infrastructure. We have a 10-gigabyte fiber backbone. We have two risers. We do have Cat 6A copper cabling through the horizontal. planes of the building, which is quite aggressive for construction standards today. Tremendous amounts of wireless and cellular antennas. It's amazing how much signal the books and book stacks absorb, so we've had to install a tremendous amount. And with all the other technologies, we have to coordinate radio frequencies and who's taking up how much space on each frequency and coordinating all that. And so, you know, making sure that we have enough wireless availability for students to use all their technologies so it's not just taken up by some of our infrastructure. So it's a tremendous coordination, and it's actually lots of fun. And with this building, it's so aggressive that so many people are quite excited about it, and they have fun working on it and configuring this building so it works properly for the students. And the students are certainly giving us the enthusiasm back, that they really enjoy the space, that they're having lots of fun. On top of the infrastructure, we are providing innovative technology spaces for them as well, and they're really taken to it, which we really appreciate because it was a lot of work. And so we're getting lots of feedback. We're still installing it, lots of new things every day. We integrated lots of different touch technologies for the convenience of students. Multi-surface computing, that's going to be something that'll be really fun. And, you know, just support for the mobile technologies, because students are bringing them with them. We want them to bring their mobile technologies. And, we're just having a lot of fun with all this layered technology approach.
So how do you design a forward-thinking technology plan, knowing that it will take time to complete, time in which technology can pass quickly by? And what advice would you have for other institutions contemplating such a large-scale endeavor?
So one of the things that we invested in, which was a major investment, is throughout the building we used access flooring, and even in the floor of the museum. We assume that this building, on day one, should already be different, and it'll need to be different every year. So with the electrical and the network under the floor, that'll be easy to move. And we also, in the building, 60% of the walls are demountable. That was a decision right up front that was inherent in the flexibility. But the particular technologies employed and how you make selections and so forth.
Absolutely. So, again, just referring back to the layering, because that certainly was a primary driver in this, the planning of this building. My biggest fear is dust laying on technology. I mean, we've all seen it. It's a nightmare. So I really wanted to plan for, again, like Tom was saying, a flexible building that is easily changed and is dynamic. So we did invest heavily in the infrastructure to hopefully future-proof it for quite a long time. Because of the raised flooring system, it will be easy to rewire in the future when that comes, when that time comes. Reorganizing the space with the electrical outlets was also significant. But with the current planning, we did build in sandbox areas. So just providing square footage to technologies that can sit above the ports, above the electrical outlets, and that we can refresh easily, so that we can keep them current. So can, you know, write grants, bring in the new technologies, have student support, student involvement with the selection of them as well. So I think it really came down to the infrastructure and the planning of the building, and everything beyond the port and the electrical outlet is really, as you were saying, is going to change so quickly that we couldn't plan for that. We have to think beyond that.
We did wait as late as we could to,
yes,
to order things.
Absolutely.
So in fact, that if you walk in the building today, the media walls are just being installed and so forth. So we did, and the RFP for the visualization lab is still out, is that we did wait as long as possible to actually build our RFPs. And one, because there might be new products we didn't know about. Two, new products might be less expensive at the last moment as well.
So how does technology encourage collaboration and knowledge creation?
So on our campus, we didn't have a choice. There's so much group work. We understand that the millennials, this net generation, they've grown up working in groups, and that we actually had to find technologies to support that. So I don't think the technologies are driving collaboration. They're doing it already. And so how do we support them? So one, we certainly had strong support for student workrooms, so they can work together with walls and doors. So we've increased the number of collaborative workrooms. We've created presentation practice rooms, because faculty are asking for presentations more often. So this gives the students a space to practice these presentations, recognize where they're doing the ums and ahs or fidgeting too much, to really perfect so they can do a better presentation in class. We've also added a video conference system to one of these presentation practice rooms, so students as a group can participate in conferences abroad. We've also, with the TeamSpot software, really enhances the collaborative experience. So we've had very strong positive student support for that. So we're really happy with that decision.
EDUCAUSE podcasts are sponsored by Moran Technology Consulting, providing management and IT consulting services to higher education institutions around the world. MoranTechnology.com.